Yo, 1212, this is DJ ESE, Chef Stressed, Jesse Ferguson from Innerborough Spirits and Ales, motherfuckers. You better give some money to steal this beer right now, patreon.com.
Hey y'all, it's 5 o'clock on Monday and we are stealing
Welcome.
Beer. What's up, John Hall?
How are you, Augie Carton?
Welcome back. You missed a long, slow, pause-ridden episode with Jesse Ferguson that I enjoyed thoroughly.
I was in Chicago doing Chicago things.
Welcome back. Did you have Malort?
I did have Malort.
Yeah.
I listened to some blues.
Have you come Chicago around on Malort?
I've always been around on Malort.
Okay.
Like I'm an unabashed fan of
but
things that like give me punishment
until I knew you.
Yeah.
And now I'm a huge fan.
Liquid earwax? Like, it is just, you know, it's
Cass?
Delightful. Cass is here.
This is one of those less fun episodes where I can't torture the person by not acknowledging him because it's Josh Bernstein and he knows
Josh.
Jump in and not let me wait. So let's just start off with our accomplice tonight is Josh Bernstein, who has written another book.
Oh my God, another book.
Many books.
So many books.
Good books.
What number is this? Number 5, and plus a bunch of things in my 20s, which shall remain.
Is it like fan fiction?
Nah, I did like,
Men's Room Graffiti doesn't count as things you've written in your 20s.
I literally did a caption book. It was like, World's Luxury Toys, Volume 2. One of those things where like, we just need somebody to crank out captions en masse and like make it happen on there.
You were very early to meme culture.
I was very early on it.
I wonder what
Brian,
that's, I wonder what that's going on for eBay these days, because I have a couple of signed copies of World's Best Toys 2003.
Really?
Is it Volume 2?
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Wait, have you guys been friends since 2003?
Yeah. Yeah, we've known each other probably for quite a while. But,
frenemies, at least.
All right, easy.
All you writer dudes are frenemies.
Got claws.
All you writer dudes are frenemies. The only time I ever feel like uncomfortable on the show is when one writer is talking to another about how shitty the other's writing is. It happens all the
That's
time.
That's also very, very true.
It happens all... It's the only time...
Except when Allworth is here, because he's the best in the business.
Allworth is my favorite,
yeah, exactly.
So I take his side versus all you guys. The rest of you, I'm kind of ambiguous.
Yeah. John, I'm sitting right here.
I stand by my statement. And if you don't think that statement's true, Josh, we're going to need to sit and have some Pilsners and hash it out.
All right,
afterwards.
I feel like you guys have run ahead of me.
Hi, guys.
All right, so let's get back to it. Josh is here because he did write another book. So let's forget the...
Hang on one second. Justin, did you go
Justin's
to the bar?
Justin's looking for work, John.
Did you
Justin's
go to
looking
the bar
for work.
And get a beer for Josh, but not for any of us?
He asked. I mean...
He
I
did
mean,
ask. Or I heard him ask.
I'd love a Pilsner.
Either way, he'd love a Pilsner, Justin. You know. I will. So while we're abusing Justin, which is always fun, I noticed this new book has a dearth of scratch and sniff Snickers.
There are no scratch and sniff Snickers.
Did you? No, a dearth. Doesn't that mean none?
Yes,
okay,
but like
not a plethora.
You know, yes.
Okay. So did you think about it? Did you and your editor talk about whether to follow the scratch and sniff?
Revolution.
It was a road that has been ridden down before. You know, like, honestly. I look back to the design on the first book I did, and they're doing all these things like spilled beer stains and things like this too, which I'm really trying to get beyond that. I mean, I think it was really fun at the time too, but I mean, it doesn't go anywhere to further the idea that beer's a beverage worth taking seriously. If it's all just about dirty beer spilled designs, I mean, we don't really...
Right, there's like post-it note. It was like supposed to be like your desk or something, right?
Like, yeah, it was like a
like
diary.
From the mind of Josh Bernstein, which is all beer stains and post-it notes, which is...
And why wouldn't it be?
Well, sure.
Yeah, which I think worked, I mean, for that time too, and it did well. But I mean, for now, I really think just seeing where the scene has evolved to and how things have changed, I really want to see things differently from a design standpoint. Because nobody's going to take a book seriously if it's like filled with just... you know, beer stain type things or just gimmicky aspects.
So actually, it's funny. You've run ahead of, like, I like to think about these things before we do them, and I never actually see them through. But that's a round question three I wanted to ask you, because let's ignore all the books John and you have already mentioned. There's three of yours that are key to me at Carton, because as you know, I've given your books, not this one yet, but I've given your books to my staff because I think they're very conversational. I think they're informative. So if we start with, is it called Tasting Beer, the one that was all about just general beer, drinking in the styles of the world?
Randy Mosher.
No. What's the name of your book?
The Complete Beer Course.
Complete Beer Course, okay. So Complete Beer Course, IPA, and now this one, right?
Yeah.
So I love all three or four they did, and I see them as kind of leading edge for trend. You know what I mean? Like things are going so fast that I think you could do that style of book every 2 years and be doing new stuff. So I don't want to beat that up too much. But one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, they're pretty tightly grouped. And like I said, when knowing beer meant knowing 50 different things, it was a 50 different thing book. And then when knowing beer meant knowing the nuance and evolution of IPA, it was that. And now we're kind of at 2.0 of here's everything going on and here's what may be serious, here's what may not be serious, here's what's going on. But within the context of you and your evolution in that time, besides that, because that would have been a perfect answer to this question, but besides that, what else did you see change in how Bernstein approaches beer and how much of that was alongside or how much was just trying to make better copy? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think with something like Complete Beer Course, we're at a point in around 2012, 2013 when you need to almost understand these stylistic frameworks to see where things were going. And this is before things really got blown totally out for when anything was really fair game. And so back then I thought it really made sense to really talk about how these beers fit together and how breweries were taking these concepts and bringing them to the modern day and then making slight tweaks. But then slight tweaks have given way to basically like destruction of any sort of orthodoxy altogether. And so this idea of drinking 10 beers or collecting Pliny the Elder and all of a sudden you understand IPAs or you drink this one barrel-aged stout or you get this one Belgian monk-made double and all of a sudden you've created, you've summited like the mountain of beer knowledge. You're there. I mean, I don't think that's really the case so much anymore. I think it's less about accumulating all these different taste experiences, which is still good to understand flavors, how they fit together, but more about how the culture is fitting together and how the culture is really informing the way that beer is being created and the way that beer is being sold right now. And that's where I really thought now I want to have less of drink these two beers, more of I understand these concepts.
And so now you go to where I was going to lead with question one. So well done. This is much easier than usual. Maybe I'm just more
he's
sober.
A pro.
But he's always been a pro. This is going where I wanted it to go. So did you practice? I thought we were early in the run. All right, so we're
every morning Josh like just does fake interviews in this mirror at home. It's fantastic.
But what I like about this book is, you know, we try on the show to never yuck someone's yum, which means sometimes I regret language I use about things I think are too easy. You know what I mean? Because it's easy, it feels like I'm disparaging it. I don't mean that. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I try not to be that because I don't want to be in that space.
Thanks,
a lot of what this new book accomplishes would easily drift into, well, if you really want to know, you have to have Eyinger from 08. And that, even though that may be true and it's a good point of reference, that often gets abusive for everything going on right now is stupid and just 5 years ago there was still depth. And I like that this book avoids or seems to avoid to me making those judgments, even though there are, you know, light jabs at Instagram and all the things that need to happen. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
was that conscious or is that
on,
just
you
how you're
a
trying
light
to look
jab
at
Instagram in your book?
You know, no. This book has a lot of other people's thoughts.
That's what I've
there are jabs
I've heard.
In the book.
I haven't seen it.
But there are jabs in the book that are crafted to not be mean-hearted or, you know, get off my lawn.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I'm not saying it's free of those, but I think it does a good job of still staying and...
Well, you know, I think you have to have... I think you have to have opinions now that I think... One of the issues we ran into the last couple of books is I think... you know, I'm a very voice-driven writer ever since my days of working for Alternative Weekly. It's doing a weekly column. And so the idea for me is that voice is really paramount. And I think the last couple of books kind of veered away from this voicey idea thing where it became a bit more reference-like, I think, with Homebrew World and Complete IPA. For this book, we really wanted to make it really, you know, me on the page, my thoughts, supported by other people's thoughts. We're driving through all together and very, you know, very voice-driven, very opinionated, but also very fun. I mean, I think the people I make fun of the most in the book are myself for being 18, having a keg of Ice House beer in the laundry room for 18 days and drinking from it, not knowing any better because we don't know any better most of the times, too. And so I'm the biggest fall guy in the patsy in the book of all. And I mean, that should always be the point that I think... We have these ideas what experts mean, and I mean, can anyone ever be considered the ultimate expert? There's everybody that's got their areas of knowledge. So what I really want to do for this book is kind of find the people I thought could help me better understand this beer world as it's changing and evolving, and really tell have their voices be part of this story as well.
All right, so that again leads to my last, and then I'm really out of shit, so you're gonna have to pick up after the glass. But that was my next question: was how much of what you did in this book feels like your homebrew tour guide days with 7,000 brewers to pick from? Because back in the days when you were leading people around homebrewing and talking about that kind of culture and interacting with that level of brewer, there were only 1,000 brewers. You know what I mean? So some of those people have become pros, and I know that's the thing, but you know what I mean? How much of the conversations you were having 10 years ago with homebrewers mimic what you can now have because of the depth of brewers there are to go to? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it goes in twofold. That we've known a lot of these people together since 10, 15 years ago, so we're able to really, we've been on this flavor journey together, going from when beer had just kind of started percolating up in this third wave in American society to now. But, I mean, what I learned doing those tours back then is that, you know, people always don't know as much as you think they do, and it's always sort of folly to think that everybody knows the difference between ales and lagers. That's most basic. I mean, every tour I do, every event I do, there's people that don't know. So what do? You try to make everybody understand it's okay not to know them, take them with you. And I think a conversational voice, a conversational but confidently knowledgeable voice works out really well, I think, for taking things along on there. And so I think, but yeah, I mean, I never thought I'd be here 10 years later after doing a homebrew tour and doing that, being five books in. I mean, you can't really chart something like this, much like you can't really chart where everything is at with beer right now. But I mean, I think why I thought this book was important to write now is because everything is kind of moving so rapidly, and there's not really a point on it where we stop and say, like, how do we get here? Where's going? What's next? What can we do? And how can we better do that? There's so much sort of drinking without being really intentional about it, which is totally fine. I mean, there's a time and place for just chugging things back. But I mean, sometimes it's great to take even 5 seconds and ponder what's happening and then going to the next.
And there's the perfect introduction to the Black Glass. What brings us together on Steal This Beer is a candid conversation of beer and what it is, not what we thought or hoped it would be. And to facilitate that, John and I drink blind out of opaque black glasses. Josh brought this beer. And we know nothing about it except that it's every IPA in the world.
These days.
Like, I wouldn't even be surprised. So I'm working on a beer right now that I'm calling Wedge Issue, because I'm trying to do 50-50 Citra Mosaic and just try to make them complement each other in the way I'm doing it, and how much I argue whether that's a good or bad thing to do, that you can make such a generous, pleasing thing so simply.
Yeah.
And I feel like this beer tastes like that beer is going to end up tasting when I'm done with it. Does that make sense?
I think there's a little bit of sweetness.
Yeah, it's but it's a super generous beer.
I get a lot of like that green oniony garlic thing going on as well with this one. Yeah.
The other half. But
there's also like a little bit of like this like And there's a little bit of like this like saltiness that comes through as well. Ooh. But like there's a fun this is sort of like one of those things where if somebody said, "Oh, this is..."
Can you perceive any bitterness on this beer at all?
No.
Me either.
And that's the really fun thing about where we are with IPAs right now. And like, I don't know, it's interesting. Like the beer that I've had a bunch of recently is Double Two Hearted from Bell's. So it's like their imperial version of Two Hearted, and it tastes a lot like 120. It's super chewy. It's super like
120.
Yeah, like it tastes a lot like Dogfish Head 120, where it's like that, you know, American super IPA verging on barley wine, like but like overly kind of thing, and like so bitter. Like where after I finished the first one, I was like, you know, a little bit buzzed, but then also like holy crap, like the bitterness on this is just off the charts from like, but like it goes to what you're saying, Josh, of like, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, like that's what we were looking for. That's what we were sort of expecting. Whereas a beer like this right now, I think is what so many beer drinkers are expecting from an IPA. It's, there's no mistaking that this is an IPA, but like the bitterness just isn't there, and you're getting this fun, you know, oniony, garlicky, you know, little
fruity,
bit of like piney. There's a little
right?
bit of fruity
there's
in there
those,
as well.
And there's, and what's funny is
a little
it's not
piney
grapefruit
as well.
I'm not getting much grapefruit or pine. That's what I was saying. It's It's
did they just fired up the popcorn machine,
did.
Right?
Because I saw you smelling the black bag and said, we got to make popcorn.
I was like, holy crap. This, like,
I don't know how it happened so quickly, but it's just filled up with diacetyl in the last 6 seconds.
But you know, John, it's so interesting. We were at that point like 5 years ago, we wouldn't be drinking this, but so many people are getting into beer now, and that's sort of their entry point.
Yeah,
I mean, that
100%.
People are not getting into beer with like a Dogfish Head 90 Minute or something like that, or even, you know, it's a
and that's a tough sell for those.
Well, I just did two. So,
where
I have beers like this, but I also have beers that I do periodically. So our anniversary, we do this double version of boat. Just every, you know, say three out of every four anniversaries, just fuck around. No, need a bigger boat.
Okay,
but it's constant. It's just what we're fucking around with on the dry hop changes. And since the last time I did it, a lot of the feedback went to, wow, this is bitter. And I don't mean in 10 years. I mean since 2 years ago. And it's no more bitter than it ever was. And, you know, I can quantify all that with measurements. But the palate has moved so much lighter that although Boat wasn't even a bitter beer, or that double Boat wasn't a bitter beer when I first made it 9 years ago, it's now far more bitter than people expect when they see a hazy yellow double IPA.
Yeah.
So that's definitely where the world's gone, but...
You know, I love hearing you talk about Boat.
I'm talking about people's perception
of
bitterness.
How much do you have left in your glass right now?
It's gone.
Smell your glass for just a second.
It smells like diacetyl.
Are you getting... I'm getting like a little bit of like alcohol solvency.
Marshmallows.
Nope.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brian Cass is giving a mic tonight.
Cass is here. We were about 8 minutes in when the drugs kicked in for Cass. There's a little bit of like a little alcohol solvency that I'm getting just on the very, very back end. It's like the glass is sort of empty of like fusel alcohol.
I'm not going to argue with on that because that's perceptible and I get it. But what I was thinking was, since I obviously think this is another half beer.
Because of the oniony garlic?
Just because of that Sam footprint, that Citra heavy with stuff around it. I would have guessed it as not one of their crazy high ones because I'm not getting any lactose.
Right,
and its mouthfeel is so gentle that I thought, whatever. So the trick here might be that it is up 8.5 and I'm just not getting that.
If it is another half, I find it much more approachable than I do a lot of their other things. But like this is the type of beer where if I showed up at a party and among all of the White Claw and spritzers
you
and everything else.
You go to parties that have White Claw?
Oh,
see, I would respect the fuck out of a party that was serving spritzers. I would completely disrespect the place serving White Claw. Like, if I showed up to Josh's house, like, tonight, spritzers. We got gallons of Gallo and all the seltzer water you want. Throw a lemon in it. Let's go. I'd be like, great party, dude. Cans of...
How much hard seltzer do you have in your apartment right now, Josh?
None, but I did go to a kid birthday party in the park yesterday at noon, and what they had to drink, all Truly and Arctic Summer. It was like no beer.
What is Arctic Summer?
Harpoon's Polar collaboration.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I'm not on that list. Yeah.
I don't even know what that is. Well, yeah. He was at a party.
It's a kid's party. It was for five-year-olds.
You know what's funny?
I wasn't invited. I'm not invited to kids' parties anymore.
Somebody brought Jesse's gin and tonic.
Yeah, who was that?
On the show recently, and you know, when I write the sentence where I drink it, I was like, I'd put this in a Big Gulp cup, convince people it was ginger ale or Coke, and just drink it all day. And it's like, oh, it's a gin and tonic
right,
from
until
Jesse.
It was
like,
time
perfect.
To cut the cake, and then Augie goes off on this long, like, soliloquy of like, you know, well,
I'd
cake
never make
was
it to the cake at a kid's birthday party. Anyway, so yeah, that's where I'm
no,
drinking.
No, but I pull it out of a.
I'm drinking this in Brooklyn.
I'm drinking this wherever it's available, and I'm maybe having two, and then I'm going to go. Hunt for something else.
Yeah, no, I feel like if you're at a party where this is served, there's going to be 20 versions of it, so it or the one, the other one is going to be
I think
fine,
this might,
right?
I think if I have two of these, it'll put me off of IPA for the rest of the day.
Wow, that's never happened to me.
Yeah, all right. Hey, Kennedy.
Kennedy, what
or,
is it?
Hold on a second. Josh, you've had this before, right? Do you know this beer?
It was actually my first time trying it.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Well, what's it doing for you?
What's it doing half. For me? You know, I think...
That's not other half.
No,
it's not. No.
It's a silver sticker can.
Yeah, but I think so many of these IPAs, like these new breed, tend to go overdose in the sweetness. It does have a little bit of the a bitterness in the back end. And also, I think you guys are picking up on, there's a bit of the... there's tea in there as well. So a bit of that tannic...
That
tannic drying...
Tannic. Yeah.
So the tannic drying quality, so it kind of like cuts down some of the sweetness on there,
yeah.
Which can kind of be the downfall of the style. When you take away bitterness... What actually acts as like the balancing fulcrum
structure.
In it. Yeah.
Good point.
Why'd you pick this beer?
No? It's something different to talk about. How many tea beers do you drink that are not just like overtly tea or just like green tea or...
Yeah. It's a nice touch. Those guys, when they do that well. When they touch something, they touch it. They don't steamroll it.
Yeah, I just think it was different approach. It wasn't just, you know, different hop bill. It was kind of a, here's a new ingredient in there that's going to actually serve a point and a purpose and not just for kind of, flavor pyrotechnics.
What's the ABV on it?
Probably 8-ish.
I'm trying to find it.
They're usually on the side.
I'd fire up my phone, but we're on airplane mode since we're not allowed to have the internet.
We're not allowed to have the internet.
No internet.
So, thank you, Finback, though. We're not live, but Basil, if you want to call in right now, let us know.
Where?
The Cass mind phone. Where do you think he would call into, Cass?
You try to read that can, dude. It's fucking hard.
No,
he
I don't
just
want
read
to.
It.
7.4%.
7.4, right. So that's about where I thought it was.
All right.
Where they wrote it.
Well, that was fun.
Very all right, cool. Moving on. So there was, God, we got so deep on that beer, which I guess is our job. But I had a great fourth question that occurred to me while you're talking, and I glazed right over it. So did you want to ask something while I
No, no, please. I want to hear your great
But that's the thing. I've lost
question.
It. I've lost it because we got so involved in the tones of that there beer.
It's a fun beer.
So, all right. So let's talk about what did you revisit from the beer course in this book? And how? Because the first thing I flipped through was how much is recycled. And I couldn't find anything that identified to me as recycled. But obviously, there's no way to write a 200-page general beer book without certain topics coming up again.
You know,
so what had it advanced in the 6 years? And what were you sorry that it wasn't worth writing about anymore?
I think in the first book, I think Complete Beer Course, we didn't really go too deep into something like all the different minutia of tasting beer. Was kind of, here are the broad strokes, here's the overview, because I always feel that if you want to dive in a little bit deeper, you can, and so there's other ways to go about it, and most people don't really always want to get in. You could write, people have written hundreds of pages on just the art of tasting beer alone, but in this case, I wanted to go interview more sensory specialists and talk about how they approach it and make it feel more human, that we all have a set of taste buds. Not everybody wakes up as a super taster, that there are certain things you can do in ways people learn how to better understand things. Write down what you're tasting. Drink with friends like we're doing right now and talk about what you're having so you're not
well,
just
frenemies, as you said.
Or frenemies.
Yeah.
Well,
whatever.
He was talking about
second
me,
best
dude.
Beer writer.
He's maybe third.
Third.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm not even in the top 10
I'd
at this
point. I'd
put
you in my top 8.
But yeah, but I think for this.
Knowing seven well.
Hall of the Ocho.
Yeah. John, but I really wanted, you know, Ocho I wanted Hall. To make it, I want to make all these things where it seems like it's so. That it seems so arcane to make it seem so approachable, and that's why I went to Algash. Spent the day sitting through, you know, the quality control program with them, just to talk about what it takes and how you can understand it pretty easily. I think there's so much that happens behind the scenes, and so much we don't even think about. But I mean, it's such an art form. It both a merger of art and science to get to that point where this beer tastes the exact same every single time, and that's why I want to talk about stuff like we may malign Budweiser and be like, oh, I can't believe it tastes like that. And like, everyone's got a beer they prefer when they don't. But I mean, it's admirable, I think, to be able to replicate that on a global scale and have it taste the same. And just the
I know Augie doesn't like that argument, but like,
yeah, I hate that argument.
But here's the thing, though, because this brings up the interesting point, though. So the book is called
Drink Better Beer. Yeah,
Better Beer.
How you're do just you make it bitter? That's funny.
How do you quantify, or how do you define what better beer is these days?
You know, I think it's a good question, because I mean, we're kind of waffling back and forth on if we're going to go drink better beer, drink beer better. Drink beer better, you know,
preachy.
It sounds a little bit preachy on there, but it kind of gets the point across, but it does feel a little bit preachy on there. It's like, you drink beer better. You don't drink beer well right now, too.
I felt that looking through. I was like, I feel like Josh wanted this to be drink beer better, and
but
you know, in my head I was like, maybe somebody had already used that or whatever, but
no,
I get
but that
it.
Sounds
yeah.
like an ear
yeah
asshole.
No, I get it but there is definitely good advice for there on how to improve your drinking experience. In there yet,
but I think, you know, for the drinking better beer, I mean, it's like, I think it's more about, to me, it's about to me it's really about the whole approach. It's maybe about thinking about this, just understanding that the liquid in your hand, just all the different fingertips and thoughts and processes that went through it to get this beer into your hand. I mean, I just want you to really feel you understand the process in a way that makes it feel like the, you know, you pull the curtain back just a little bit and realize behind the curtain it's not scary. It's just people like you and I that are doing this together. Sure. They just happen to work in this business.
Now, let me hear your opinion. I don't know if I've ever had this argument with you, so I will give you your chance to react to what he just said. I'm not saying it's not a feat,
yeah,
to produce 9 million barrels of Bud Light in Newark and have them taste exactly the same every time. What I'm saying is nobody says McDonald's is a fantastic creator of food because they do that trick with hamburgers.
Right.
So I don't understand why the beer world says, having had them do everything they could to control every single thing that is live in that experience so that it's always exactly the same, and having neutered it so far past what's possible for those types of flavors so that it is reproducible exactly every time,
uh-huh,
why do we respect them for it and not respect McDonald's for it? Unless you're a guy that does respect McDonald's for it, because adding flavoring to beef patties so that it's always the same is definitely the same trick as switching out rice and using beechwood to clean up, and you know what I mean? Like,
you're not going to be surprised.
I've done this on so many shows. Josh, it's all you.
No, it's Josh's turn. I'm just,
yeah. I mean, you're not going to be surprised. I mean, you want to watch. I mean, that's why people, it's a safety thing. And I mean, sometimes you need safety and you want to feel confident.
I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm saying it's fine to say this is the feat they've accomplished. My problem is when it's a talent for them because they taught us to say that as beer consumers when craft first started. Right, that was their attack on Sam and Pete's and all that was, how do you know it's going to be good every time? Ours is the same every time. That's an art. It's not harder to make. It's actually much easier to make Bud in their facility than to make this town in my facility. And our this towns are just as consistent as
we
Bud.
Know.
So but I just want to know how they controlled that argument and why everybody in our world, all the way up to Sean Hill, pays lip service to it.
Yeah, come on,
Josh. They have the equipment that's happening right now to be able to ensure these things, too. I mean, they've got all the bells and whistles, the equipment. But I think what we're going to see right now, too, is everybody gets bigger, you know. Founders.
They get better equipment.
They get better equipment to be able to replicate this, too. And, I mean, you're seeing it happen with somebody like Founders now being able to brew that.
Or even Firestone with 805 and then Lager and everything else.
That's what I'm saying.
Doing.
But anybody can do it. It's not a skill.
But nobody is.
Sure, but it comes with size and it comes
scale
with yeah.
right. equipment.
No, I'm saying it's a feat. It's not a skill.
But it also takes skill to manage that size, because you could be somebody who starts from scratch and has $1 billion and starts a brewery that's the size of Bud in Newark, and they don't necessarily know what to do with it. And I think that there's certain talent that comes with knowing how to make the end product taste the way that you want the end product to taste. Like, you could put me in Bud Newark and, like, I wouldn't know what the fuck I'm
doing.
But
this is just one, I think it's just like one small part thing for this too. It's also me going to places like Allagash and talking to them about how they achieve a sense of consistency and what they're looking for. And oftentimes too, when you go through these like quality control programs, what may not be a flaw, like one level is elevated on purpose for them to try to trick their tasters and see if they can figure it out. It's not a flaw per se, but one level is too elevated for their parameters and thresholds. So it's just fast to be able to do that. So I don't know. I think, look, until we get enough mega brewers, we can compare and contrast like what it's like for 5 different breweries doing this around the globe with the same thing. It's hard to say that, but I think it is to manage that on the level across the globe.
No,
but
I think you're right. And Allagash is one of those beers that have shown up on the show that I knew, right? So that's a testament to what they're doing, which is the argument I'm trying to point out, that Allagash can do it, so it's not a feat of Bud.
Sure.
Right? Like, that's what I'm saying. The guys, every now and then I just know a beer, and it's because I'm either so intimate with the beer or the person that made it that I'm used to their flavors and you can find them.
Mm.
Allagash is one I only know because it's been Allagash for as long as it's been Allagash, right? I don't know them. I've respected it for a million years. I've tasted it a million times, but it's, you know what I mean? And it showed up in the Black House. It's like, it's something like Allagash White, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's, I think that's augmenting my part of that conversation, where if you care and if you pay attention to it, it's doable.
But how many?
It's not that big a deal.
But how many beers do you drink twice now, and how many beers do you, I mean, that's a thing right now where consistency doesn't have to be a thing if you're always changing the recipe or getting a new thing out there too. So I mean, the number of beers get repeated out there for a lot of newer breweries is fewer and fewer between that.
Sure,
that's a very good point. Like I said, when I repeat one from even 2 years ago, if it's not constant, if it's not in people's face, they assume I've moved it in a direction. You know what I mean? Like,
well, there's the other part of this, though, of consistency, I think is good, but like improving upon is always better. Like, to taste Sierra Nevada Pale Ale in 2019 versus 1980 is it's going to be a vast difference. And, you know, Ken Grossman has gone on the record as basically saying that they're always trying to continuously improve to whatever their standards are as well. And I, you know, to the point of like the title of your book, I think like that to me sort of crystallizes like, not just like Wonder Bread tastes like Wonder Bread tastes like Wonder Bread, you know, from 50 years ago to 5 days ago to 5 minutes ago. Whereas like some of these beers have continued to evolve to get better, to live within their own processes
and live within our times too.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen how many recipes have been changed. Like Stone IPA has changed. Firestone Walker Union Jack's changed.
Yeah.
As these new ingredients and processes and equipment pop up, we've changed. Smutty Nose Finest Kind, everything changes with equipment too. I remember when Smutty Nose got the new facility there, like the sales rep was like, it's like our beer in 3D now.
It's a cool, yeah. It's you want to talk about the barrel-aged Robitussin that Josh brought us for glass number two?
Yeah, what the fuck is this?
What is with you guys? So this is right up my alley. Do you not know that? Are you poo-pooing this?
Are
beer?
You into this?
Oh, I'm so into this.
All right, well.
Somebody doesn't like to party.
Come on, tell me, baby.
Right, Josh? This is why it's so hard to get along with him. Something perfect.
It's not. That's not the reason, but there's so many other reasons. This is like my most likable quality.
Here's what I'll give you for you to be mean about. It's thin. Uh-huh. It's thin. That I'll give you.
Sure, let's go with that.
And it's definitely thin behind that thick IPA we just had. What I like about it is there is a char note that could be the lightest touch of smoke or the very present barrel.
Shit, smoke, man.
That's what I'm saying.
Char.
That's what I'm saying. It's charred.
Not letting you get high on air ever again.
And no more giving him the pen before we start. Understood.
It's so good.
Do you not like it?
I'm
so delighted by it.
I'm intrigued by it. Like, I don't know if, like...
Here's the thing. It's
after
not
I find out what this is, I don't know if I ever saw this, like, out in the wild that I'd be like, oh, I'm going to give you money for this. I don't
but
think
really,
I would.
See,
no.
As pissed off as you seem about it, I think
I'm
it's
not
well
pissed
within
off
some
about
boundaries.
It.
But I think it's well within enough boundaries. Like, I don't think... No, for me, to, is, for me to have the reaction you're having, I would need it to outlie in one huge way. And this I think it's lemoniness.
It's cool.
And it's tanniness and whatever that smoky... I don't know. It's again, it's like...
This is like you took a 10-year-old Sam Adams cherry wheat and poured it all over a campfire log that had been sitting out at like an abandoned campsite for, you know, 6 weeks or something.
I disagree with everything you're saying.
Cool. No, that's fun. That's why we do it. What's that?
But that never happens.
That's the seventh best beer writer. You just moved up. For the good,
cool.
Good
thanks
analogy.
Very much. Yeah.
I took him down to 9 there.
But I think about where this context is. Where you
this is a
context?
Smoked cherry wheat beer. This is like Sam Adams smoked cherry wheat. This is like what happens if like...
Did Sam Adams do a smoked cherry wheat? Are you just making up a beer?
I'm just making up beers at this point. But like
but
this
it's
is...
It's got some sourness to it, right? Like yeah, super sour. Tart cherries?
Yeah, but like it... Yeah, I...
All right.
But it's got that Robitussin medicinal thing going on. It's got super Band-Aid-y on the end. It's,
but would you have this by itself or think about the context? What would it be like if you're having this with food?
It's better as it warmed up.
I'd have this with cheese.
Oh, boy. All right.
Justin,
you're on mic, too. That's it. John, you're out.
Welcome to Steal This Beer with Augie Carton and Justin Kennedy.
If you were gonna cheese it, I'd be fine with like a really beefy cheese, like a Boss or something. But yeah. I feel like this is
or like a Slim Jim, yeah, super beefy Slim Jim.
John,
no, I'm just
it's not
I'm
doing
not.
What you're saying. You're overdoing it.
I think
no,
I like
that.
It's got this like tinny metallic thing on it. I can't.
I'm pleased by it.
Come to the party.
Here's what I'll tell you. If this is super low ABV, I love the idea of working this into a beer dinner somewhere middle. Right, so you got to get people in and get them involved in those first two or three courses. So it's got to be a beer they like, and by the end, you've got to be doing something that actually complements those harder to match things. So right in the middle, throw in this wrinkle of it's a little bit sour, it's a little bit smoky, it's a little bit fruity, super light bodied. So we put it with, you know what I mean?
I don't know,
pretzel crusted grouper.
See, I was going with pistachio crusted something or other, but yeah. Like, yeah.
But do like a pretzel raft, put some grouper on it. Give it something herby. I think this is fun with that. And I think it's a neat way to get people thinking. Yeah, no, I don't I don't want to sound like I love it. I just nowhere near hate it as much as you hate it, but I think I could have a lot of fun with it if I had it. I wouldn't be sorry if I owned 11 more of these.
Here's the problem. It's early on a Monday, and I would like to have a whole bunch more beers.
It's 5 o'clock on
before the end of the evening. And
I have to go home.
I understand that.
All
right. I thought we were partying. This is sort of like the palate wrecker. If you don't have this at the right time in your night, this thing is going to repeat on you all night long.
Oh, I can come back from this easy.
Cool.
And I like the smoke. Anyway, well, let's stop beating. Let's stop
Josh,
beating
have
up
you
the
had
spirit
this
defending
beer?
It.
I have not.
All right. Oh, so what's it doing for you?
Yeah, in this case, too, I think the smoke can be
a little... Hey, Kennedy, if you could just get off of your phone.
The smoke can be a little bit off-putting at first, I think, but it's one of those things where the first sip's going to shock you, second sip's going to be...
Peach and apricot.
Second sip's going to be like, okay, I get this. Third one's like, okay, this is fun. I get the fruit that kind of comes up a bit more, that plays with the smoke a bit more, and I think this beer was originally made to be partnering with food.
Who makes this?
Fair State, out of Minneapolis. Yeah, so be cool. Partnering with barbecue. So if you put it in this context of barbecue and food together... It could work out really well, like peach wood, smoke, whatever. Yeah. You know, you've got something.
Why'd you grab this one?
Because it's kind of fun, because it's something new to talk
very
about.
Very cool.
Yeah,
it's different to talk about. I don't know.
I'm on Josh's side here.
All right,
and what's funny
fine.
Is I now get, so when I fuck around with things like this, right? When I do that little rub beer I did or whatever, there's people that either love it like I loved it. I'm like, oh, it's a perfect four and it's right where it should be. Or there's the people that just fucking hate it the way you just hate it. And
I think that's
an experience you go through every time you try to fuck around like this.
The smoke goes away on here after a little bit, and like the fruit forwardness kind of hits, the peachy notes come through, and I think
I like this level of sour. Like I said, so here's with what you're saying, my problem is I think next to a well smoked thing, it would get run over because its body's a little thin.
That's why
I was going with fish. But you could definitely do like smoked salmon with it and not smoked trout or anything. All right, so we agree. Whatever. I'm happy to be on the wrong side of history on that one. I think it's a cool beer.
Very, very cool beer, Josh. Thank you, Josh.
It would not be the first thing I'd bring out to like show people what the possibilities of what sour could be in smoke. It's like that would be like the Schenkel of Helles for the smoke aspect and the sour, like anything that's going to be light kettle soury goes to kind of work your way up. And
I mean, the smoke comes from the fruit, too, on the beer. It's
they
not
smoke
from,
the fruit?
They smoke the fruit.
I know a guy that used to do that.
Very, very cool.
So let's get back to your book because, all right. So, what question would you have asked you if you were me? Because I'm serious. Like, what's the thing about this book you think makes it unique today? Because one of the other things I wanted to mention was
I have my own.
I loved the art in it. Like, I thought it was very porny and a shit ton of wood porn.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, speaking of art, Cash, you got paid to have a photo in this
book. The coolest thing about Josh's book is that I have a photograph in it.
Nice. Which one? Is it a me?
Ironheart, I think.
It has something to do with mobile canning. So, Josh, thank you.
And you got paid
out.
For it.
Yeah, I did.
That's
everybody,
nice.
Everybody should get paid for their work.
Goddamn right.
It's supposed to work.
I made sure all the... to talk about the art real quick because we're on it,
Yeah.
I mean, the way this book worked out, my editor left at the very beginning of the project, the photo editor at Death in the Family. So basically, me and my new editor had never met before. We had a phone call, and I was like, all right, I guess we're out here on our own boat together. So you brought back the boat.
It's all about
our
boat.
Own boat.
It's all about boat.
So God, the pandering.
It's literally the greatest beer.
Where can we go with this? And I was like, I want this book to be pretty voicey. I want this to have these things in there, too, and I want the art to be great. So I took a really outsized role in getting all the art, looking for photographers, paying people, which is such an arcane concept.
I love it, and it's reproduced well.
You know what I mean? Like the color balance and the print of the photo. Like,
we looked for a good like visual saturation and something like that. And I mean, I'm glad you noticed that because I mean, that's probably particularly,
and I don't know if this was by design or just where the better pictures were available or what you're trying to do, but anytime there's a barrel in a picture, it's a really sexy picture. Like, all the art's good, but there's fooders in there, there's barrel rooms in there, but like it's like that nice warm room you want to be in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like where pictures of wood always get so washed out today. I really liked your representation of those types of rooms when they appeared, and that's what.
Yeah.
Like, when I was looking at some of the pictures of barrel rooms, I was like, "Jesus, this is fucking great photography."
We worked, you know, there were a lot.
And that was all Brian Cass.
It was all Brian Cass. But no, we really did.
You got cover credit too, which
out,
I was impressed with.
Sought out beer photographers that I liked, contacted them, and then you know, I mean, it goes a long way. And so like, oh, can I have your picture for free? Or, you know, here is the rate that we have. We'd love to pay more, but here are the rates we're paying for people. It's second. If it's second use, it's totally great for you. And so, I don't know, that's always been my thing. No matter if I'm running a beer event or putting a book together, I want to make sure everybody at least feels like that it's profession.
Well, was it good for Dimebag Business?
It was good. It was actually from a canning run that I think we're canning one of Augie's beers.
Oh, so Augie's in the book, in the too. Book. That's nice.
That's awesome. But
yeah, I think one of, I would say you're asking what got left out or what. I mean, I think one of the things is that, I mean, here's how books work sometimes. So we put the book in, and then they asked for about 40,000 words. They gave them about 50, knowing there'd be some changes and things there too. They got it back. They're like, well, the you know, the layout and the way we budgeted it, we're probably about like 28 to 32 pages short for the book right now. And I was like, what the hell just happened? Because you told me to do 40,000 words. I gave you, John, like, I gave him 50. And so then we end up having to, like,
you're like the worst kind of writer, though. They tell you to give one number, and you're giving, like, oh, here's 10,000 words that you should cut if you guys hit your budget.
Yeah, it's like
from an editor standpoint, like, I just, I'm angry on behalf of your editors.
No, I can't, whatever.
Uh-huh.
He gave them stuff they like.
Yeah, sure.
It's easier, it's not that, it's easier to, like, cut some things out for a book aspect when it's coming. So I'm not even, whatever.
I've never edited a book or written a book.
It's easier, but anyway, no. So then we had to come up with extra.
You had
content,
a great forward once.
Which I did the best forward ever written.
Probably, as far as Jersey cookbooks go.
But yeah, so I'm glad we touched on that, because it really is, I didn't even realize you were in that cast. That wasn't me setting you up for praise.
Yeah.
But that's cool as fuck.
I love that cast.
What I was
going
to say is that what having these extra pages allowed me to do is really focus on issues I thought that are happening right now and things worth discussing on there. I really had extra.
So let's talk about that.
Space to talk about.
That was a question I wanted to ask. I just did not ask it, so I'll just ask. From the from the outline you presented for This Is My Next Book to the thing that came out, what were the because things are changing so fast. What were the things that weren't on that outline that when you were doing the final edit, you're like, fuck, I've got to add? Because I saw there's even a hard seltzer part there. Like, what was you know what I mean? What was like, well, now I got to talk about this, even though it wasn't on there.
It wasn't there, but, you know, I think really quickly we saw breweries become beverage companies overnight, it felt like. It wasn't just...
well, sure, the change happened and the definition and everybody's
everything
scrambling
changed,
for it. Yeah.
Changed immediately. So I was able to really talk about how companies like Oscar Blues that make coffee and cocktails and Sam Adams, all the things they're doing, even Soundcraft Seltzer, which does like two beers and other things too. And so all these things. And also I think... we finally had a moment where we came a reckoning with diversity and what it means within beer too. So I really wanted to talk about that,
present that
and make that forward. I mean, just all these things I think we should be thinking about as beer consumers in 2019 and beyond. And, you know, ultimately the way that I didn't want to have another book that would be dated immediately. So the way to get through this was really to put a complete minimum, I think, on beers to drink and more about you're drinking up concepts and less drinking up all these things. I think we have maybe two sections. One was amber ales. Like, why did we forget about amber ales? I mean, why do we so forget this beer that was really amazing with food?
But that's your own axe, right?
Yeah.
That's the verse. You're like, the fuck, guys? This one should have stayed around.
And also, I had Mitch Steele, the two-page spread in there, talking about how we got to this point with IPAs and what we kind of missed in this run-up we were talking about a bit earlier on, John. Like, you know, you got your double hazy whatever,
yeah.
But how can you forget how revolutionary Harpoon IPA was? So maybe just try it and think about it on this continuum of beer and how we got there and how that was really important and how 90 Minute and like 02 really was something that was just from the future.
Yeah, it's a marvel.
Yeah, from the future. And now it just feels kind of, or I think Two Hearted as well and even Anchor. Yeah.
Well, I've got that list.
Even Anchor.
I've got the list of beers I was drinking when I started that I still think matter and I need to revisit are Highline, Nugget, 60, Flower Power,
yeah,
Harpoon.
Flower
right?
Power like is one of those.
It's the circle when I'm trying to identify what I think is East Coast versus Northeast. I'm like, look, in that middle part of the world, there were these 12 beers within 2 years of each other that weren't all about bitterness, had a lot of aromatics, but had the malticarium, and they were the fucking beer that I was like, oh my god, beer can do amazing things. And luckily, those ones I listed are all important enough that I can still revisit them quite regularly.
But they've changed too. I think Flower Power's recipe got revisited.
Well, they lost a chief.
They did. But also, I think one of the things I tried...
But they also had to evolve in a modern sense.
I don't think had to. Everybody keeps saying that. I don't think that's true, because I keep getting that argument. I've seen people do it. I know what you're talking about. Guys that opened when I opened had their double IPA and kept the name and changed the recipe. I promise you, without fail, O-Dub today is the exact O-Dub we made 8 years ago. And I just call it O-Dub and make sure it's there for everybody else. And when I want to fuck around with a different IPA, I create a new brand.
That's an economy of scale thing, though. Your size versus somebody else who's a little bit larger and has a larger
footprint. There's no way Trogs doesn't still have a small tank to put Nugget Nectar in if they don't want to change Nugget Nectar.
They only do
it with beer. If what you're saying, that's not true. That's stop. If the demand had fallen enough that they could only sell whatever they were selling originally, now that it's been great and come off, they've got a small tank to put that in. They only put it out once a year. It still sells out when they make it. But the beers I'm talking about, 60 is still 60. 60 is not different. Highlight is still Highlight.
But how have we changed, though? I mean, like, we've changed, like, the way we dress changes every, you know.
Not me. I'm so sloppy all the time.
You know, everything.
Whatever I am is sloppy.
It all changes, too. I mean, our taste buds, our interests, everything all together. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't have told, you know, like 2011 me that I'd be like, I'm going to go after the unfiltered, you know, Radaburger.
Hard seltzer, yeah.
Or was it the unfiltered Radaburger's Wickel beer? That'd be like the first thing that jumps out to me on this list of,
it's the first beer, but yeah.
It does really jump out.
That's uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable, too.
Some people always compliment me that when they go into Tiger, I'm often in the first spot.
Yeah,
and I'm like, that's got nothing to do with them liking me. It's got everything to do with the fact that that's the spot that turns the fastest, because it's what people that aren't thinking just order, right?
I'll have the number
spot one. I'll take that. So that's the one that changes 20 times to everything else's two.
But don't they also have a thing for each slot has a different like style assigned to it? I think so.
Not for my beers that they sell.
Okay.
They sell all of my beers in that slot because I think they can only, you know, we only give them 2 kegs a month, and it's just when it comes up, that's when I'm on.
Yeah.
But I bet you there are ones that are like Grimm's Lime, because there's always a Grimm there. Right, I'm not always there, but there's always a Grimm there. There's always a couple guys. Mm-hmm. I bet you they have their spots. Anyway, whatever. And I wanted to thank you that you just touched on the last thing I wanted to talk about, was you did the list of what you were drinking while you made the book. And I liked that, going back to the fact that you weren't doing the get off my porch thing. You talk about everything going on in beer and all that's going on, but what you were drinking is some pretty classic style shit, right? So hidden in there to me was, here's a guy who drinks like a regular beer drinker, and here's a guy writing a book about beer now without that preachy kind of predilection.
I just think we don't have to drink performatively always. It doesn't always have to be something that's, we're not drinking performance for online, Instagram, whatever. It doesn't always have to be something excessive. It's sometimes we drink because we just want a beer and we want something that's going to satisfy us if we have two or four of them.
Yeah.
And that's it. And I mean, I think oftentimes what gets filtered through the prisms of the world that we live in right now is that everything has got to be this amazing world-changing experience. But oftentimes, I mean, sometimes the most satisfying things are the ones that go back to what we've always loved. And so it's
comfort in the familiar.
Comfort in the familiar. And I mean, that's what it is. And that's really what I think. I don't know. I mean, look, I've got no idea what will work with books at all anymore. I mean, if any of us knew what's going to work, it would be enough. I wanted to write the book that I wanted to write and tell the stories I wanted to do. And if it fails on my terms. And if it succeeds, it succeeds on my terms. But I mean, you know, you can't expect somebody to just pick it up and then, you know.
I like it. I think it's a good book. I know. I think it's a good book. I really enjoyed what I've been through. I'm going to actually read it. You know, this was a let me get it in my head before I see Josh, but I'd like to sit down and read it like I did the others. That being said, did you think about putting it out on December 26th instead of September 17th?
It was.
That's the best day to release a book, right?
It was a thought. It was like, how can I really shoot myself in the foot and miss all the holiday sales?
Boxing Day.
It was really a really good idea. I was like, Canada's got to be buying.
Classic Justin.
But no.
Last minute Boxing Day gifts is when all beer books move.
When's your new book coming out, Justin?
December 26th.
All right, yeah.
Anyway,
so we'll have Justin on the show.
So September 17th, which will be, you'll hear this, Thieves, after it's released, but that's its official release date.
Yeah,
right?
It's September 17th, which is, crazy. I mean, I think this book was about a year from starting writing it to getting it out there, and it was really much faster than I wanted, but
I don't think it hurt.
Cool.
All right. So we got to say thank you to the Patreons who paid for that beer Justin bought Josh, but didn't buy Hall.
It was happy hour. Anyway, it was only $6.
Super happy hour.
Super happy hour. Well, that's why it was rushing.
Treadwell Park.
To save the Patreon money. Thank you, Treadwell Park.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to say thank you to Evan Levine to start things off.
And I'm going
to
start off with Charlie Chess Sweater. Thanks so much.
Evan Pike. I'm up to two Evans so far.
Austin Gorley. I have two different first names to kick things off.
I've got, it says Phony Bones, F-O-N-Y.
Phony Bones.
But I think it must have meant to be funny and something corrected itself.
Justin doesn't know how to spell
Justin
people.
Is
I'm sorry.
The worst.
Phony Bones, F-O-N-Y Bones.
I know this name is real. It's Bill Malloy.
Gene Lynch.
Thanks, Cody McCarron.
This says Gregory Yachts, J-A-C-H-T-S, but I'm going to guess it's Jax.
Yeah, we know him. Dr. David Hoptagon, who
nice.
Identifies himself as a hoptagonicologist.
Sweet.
That's a very good moniker.
His favorite singer, Dr. Octagon.
Dr.
Nice.
Octagon. I just did that one, so that's Jake Eager's next up.
Matthew P., thanks so much.
Joe Graham, we appreciate you.
Michelle Quigley, we appreciate you listening.
I've got a John Stevenson, John with an H.
Oh, and I have a Mike Z with a Z.
Thank you.
I've got John, J-O-N.
Sure.
And just John. So it's like Prince except everybody.
Right. Robin Holden checks in, and we appreciate everything that you're doing for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Joseph Poltrici.
Deadpool twice over. Reynolds.
Nice.
Ryan Reynolds. That guy's good.
What a fan.
Josh Welch. Thank you, Josh Welch.
Victor Taffro. We've had him on the show a couple of times now. He's good people.
Recently moved to my hometown.
Oh, sure. Move Thanks, in Victor. For the cast. Stay for the cast.
I've got Justin Lichamele.
Ann Fallon, who doesn't live in your town for the obvious reasons.
Kevin Doyle, who now knows he needs to live in that town.
Sure.
So that's where the party is.
Dan Roebuck. Thanks so much.
Kevin Randall. Nice.
Gabe Albert. Thank you for your support.
I've got Larson.
Jason Garris, who gets you out of parking tickets if you need them.
Thanks, nice. Jason. I've got Mark with a C, no last name. Thank you, Mark.
So there's a Jason Riley, but it's spelled J-A-E-S-U-N.
Jason. I know Jason's spelled that way.
Yeah?
I do. All right.
Well, Jason Riley, thanks.
I've got Mark with a K, Forsman.
Jeremy Ross with a J and an R.
Mathieu Dapkins.
Ah.
I believe he's French.
Yes. So this one's breaking the rules, but we know this. This is Niall Zachary, but he calls himself Mad Fritz Brewing Co.
All right, I'm going to go with Niall.
Niall.
Thank you,
Niall.
Thank you, Niall. Remember that? I got that wrong, as I will.
still do. Yeah.
Always confident. I'm on Matt Barry. Thank you, Matt Barry.
Sean Plache.
Plache.
Or, you know, Sean Place.
I've got Michael Buzanik.
Thomas Carrillo, thanks so much for listening in.
What up, Tom?
Mike Fry, thank you, Mike.
And thanks, Tom Court.
Mitch Muzz, thank you, Mitch Muzz.
Barnabas Schickling is giving us some Patreon money these days.
Nice,
and we like Barnabas and everything
yeah.
that he's doing.
Yeah.
Where was I? I'm on Nick Caffarella.
Benjamin really Abruzio.
Abruzio.
I'm sorry, I had to shout that because it's inexplicably in all caps on my thing, so I had
right,
to leave
you
back
could have
a
told
bit.
Cass because now I'm deaf and
what
made me forget where I was Otto Eisenberg
born ugly
is it B-J-O-R
no it's B-O-R-N underscore ugly I
wow.
know who it is I'm just gonna like Dude? Let his name you know just he wants his
That's
screen
awesome.
Name
I
would have gone
with
fine.
Bjorn ugly
yeah
Right
lots of umlauts. Umlauts over every value yeah. vowel in that name. Where was I? I'm on Parmigiani. Thank you, Johnny Parma.
Oh, Parmigiani. Is that Parmigiani. Scott Wells? That's Scott Wells.
It probably is, right? But Scott Wells can't afford to can't afford to pay Jonas.
No,
you think Scott Wells has $2?
He's
that's hilarious.
I know
that
who can
be
afford
the funniest thing you ever said on the show.
He's born handsome, Brian Atchell.
Rory Gillette. Thank you, Rory.
Hey, he works for Ironheart. Fat shout out, Rory.
Oh, look at this!
Thank
it's like
you,
it's like
Rory.
A company. It's like a company job at this point.
I hope you got paid
Steal
for that
beer
photo.
Is
you
brought
took
to you
him.
By Ironheart. Brian Ney, we appreciate everything that you're doing for us.
Sean McNulty, thank you.
Cassandra George, thank you.
I've got Tosting Meech.
Tosting
Meech.
Yeah, that's cool.
German.
every time we do this, every time you're like. Justin, you need to update this. And every time Justin just
if
absolutely
If Justin paid
doesn't.
Any attention, you'd be able to retire.
Here's another fake name, Chad Robertson.
Hi, Chad Robertson.
episode.
I've got the Kulsh Bandit, which I believe is what his mother called him.
All right, so Chris Skae or Skae, it's S-K-A-E. How would you pronounce that?
Skae.
Skae? Yeah. All right, so I got it right the first time. That's cool.
That's how I'd pronounce it, but I got to tell you, I think he selected these to be hard on me.
Uh-huh.
There's all kinds of like Italian CIs in here that I'm trying to hit the right way because I have no idea how
you...
Well,
this is like half the podcast, isn't it?
Well,
you had your turn.
Just so many people sponsor.
We bought you a beer. Just quiet for a minute, buddy.
It's because so many people sponsor us. That's how great we are.
Hold on. Yeah, do your name.
All right. Augie Carton.
All right.
Oh, you meant on the list. I'm sorry. Thomas Mohan. M-O-H-A-N.
All right. Here, read that one.
Darren McCloskey.
Say thank you, Darren.
Thanks, Darren.
His voice is better than yours.
Thanks for buying Josh a beer.
Tim Hitchings, the wonderful Tim Hitchings.
He's a super fan.
I showed you we're Pokemon friends now, right?
Yeah, you did. Yeah, I got that text at like 3 a.m. from you, and I don't even understand.
That's how I know I really know you.
DJ Pauly D D-H. Listening in.
DJ Pauly Double Dry Hop?
Yeah.
That's right.
DJ Pauly D hyphen DH.
And I'm going to end with quite possibly an actual name, TJ Osborne. Thank you, TJ.
I'm going to end with what is clearly a fake name, Eddie Dudek.
Dudek.
That sounds
Thanks.
Real.
No, it's super real. It's
super
Cass
super
is
real.
Like, I don't understand, man. This is totally
I don't get
real
these jokes
name.
At all.
Like,
the Kulsh Bandit can't be the real name.
Well, the Kulsh Bandit is definitely fucking real.
Wears right. a mask and everything.
Well, Josh, thanks for hanging out.
Hey,
congrats on your new book. Congratulations on your book, and thanks for tolerating the thank yous of the Patreons. Patrons are what keep us alive these days.
The way we really get ourselves places
and interview the cooler motherfuckers and even just get you that bevy. So thank you to the Patreons. If they want to do all that shit, Cass, do what you do.
Yeah. As always, we thank y'all for listening, especially the Patreons. Patreon us if you got a couple bucks. Patreon.com/stealthisbeer if you want to write some hate mail to Augie or John. Steal This Beer Podcast.
You should definitely write it to me. I'll respond.
I know you will.
John will never
follow
respond.
Us.
John stays
above
the
media. Steal This Beer. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Untapped. And I think that about wraps us up, man.
All right,
we have merch for sale. Merch for sale.
Yeah,
merch for sale. SteelThisBeer.com.
All right, thanks, y'all. Get at us.
Cheers.
Cheers.